sights to show you.
No, no. Now that he's on stage one of the vaccine, I'd say he's very close to being death proof.
I hate you.
Huh?
I hate you.
He's not there yet. What's up?
It was horrible. Hi, Andrew.
It's my birthday, all right? My transition can be best.
Hey-o.
Hey.
Oh, fuck. Okay, I guess we'll just use
that. Yeah, let's do it. Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast, I say begrudgingly. Happy birthday, Anthony, part three.
Yeah. This is the first episode after my birthday. So I
congrats
when this airs,
on making it to 80.
You're lucky I'm a little high right now.
Oh, so welcome back, everyone. And welcome back to the podcast, Andrew Parker. How the hell are you?
Ayo, I'm doing pretty good. Staving off insanity.
Yeah,
from,
right?
You know, being inside. It's been like about a year now.
it's been a year.
Oh, God. By the time this airs, yes, it'll have been an exact year since Newsom
everything
said.
Locked the fuck down. Mm-hmm.
When they destroyed my birthday weekend.
They did destroy your birthday. We still had fun.
That was fun, yeah.
My birthday got ruined, too, because my birthday's March
28th. Oh,
It was, like, literally, like, the day before was, like, when it was, like, okay, everything's fucking shutting down. Like, no one could do anything.
Yeah. Dude. The weekend, I think, of Anthony's birthday.
March 13th, man.
That whole weekend was when, like, Gavin Newsom was just like, okay, people who are immunocompromised, like, you're fucking done. Like, mm-hmm. Stay the fuck inside. And I was like, God
damn
it.
Yeah, we were supposed to see Bill Burr stand up that weekend, and they canceled literally that day.
Like, it was we were getting ready to go, and then we got the email like, nope, can't do it.
Yep, I had all these friends over and shit. We're like, well, we're going to get drunk in the apartment then. Boy, let's hope this doesn't last.
And here we are.
And then we were just like, I'm sure by like the summer it'll be fine.
Oh my God. Remember when our expectations were like, yeah, this is done in like 2 months, right?
Yeah.
No.
2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks times what? Like 26?
Oh, Jesus. That just hurts my heart to think about.
Oh my God. Anyway, moving on. Today, holy shit. Anthony, would you like to introduce this film? Because you're the one who picked it.
Yes. So today we are covering, first of all, a director who's one of my favorite of all time. And what in his eyes is his worst film. I don't know about that, but we're covering Death Proof by good old, well, Andrew, what does IMDb say before we get to that?
Death Proof. Two separate sets of voluptuous women are stalked at different times by a scarred stuntman who uses his Death Proof cars to execute his murderous plans.
Such a good fucking read right there. I don't know if it's because my edible latently hit me for some reason just before recording this podcast, but that sounded amazing, man.
Yeah.
Let's keep it going.
I tried to do it in the style of the Grindhouse.
It's the Grindhouse, you know. It's the voluptuous women for me that I just Jesus Christ.
That Thanksgiving trailer though. Oof.
Oh yeah.
That one.
This trailer is great.
I don't even want to.
Written and directed by Quentin Tarantino, starring Kurt Russell, Rosario Dawson, Vanessa Ferlito, Jordan Ladd, Rose McGowan, Sydney Poitier,
Yes.
They think that's how it's pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy Toms, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and Zoe Bell.
Dude,
what a
cast. This fucking cast.
What a fucking cast. Yeah. Oh my God. I saw the cast. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I really loved Zoe Bell in this movie.
Yes.
She's fucking
cool. It was cool to see like a stuntman get that upgrade.
Dude.
It's true.
And she played such like an endearing character too. I'm like, I'm rooting for you.
Yeah, she's great in this movie.
Yep.
We'll get to it, but the whole time she's on like the front of that car, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Very stressful. This whole cast, I was just like, okay, I know you. Like the whole time I was like, okay, let's see what you fucking got. So
and then
hell yeah. So for the box office info, the budget was $300 million.
$30 million.
It was released. Oh, sorry.
That'd be $30 million.
I was gonna say like
Quentin Tarantino, not James Cameron. Yes.
I was looking at the 2007 next. I see two zeros. All right. It released on April 6th, 2007. It grossed $30.7 million. And this isn't in the thing, but it was 2 hours and 7 minutes long, and you like definitely feel all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It tells two very distinct stories to the point that I was sorely disappointed when the first half happens and our voluptuous women meet their untimely end. And I was
the first set of voluptuous women, yes.
The first set of voluptuous women meet their untimely end.
There are two sets, Alex, yes.
Okay. I know. Jesus Christ. And I was just like, okay, well, where are we going to go from here? Enter Rosario Dawson.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Well, no, yeah, I saw this like for my birthday. I was so fucking excited to see this one in theaters. Like, you know, the double feature that they did. Because my birthday is March 28th, and it came out like
April 6th.
The next week. Yeah. And I remember I went with my dad to see it, and my dad like did not realize it was going to be a double feature that was going to be like 4 hours long.
Oh, no.
We had a good time, though.
That's great. 2007. A simpler time.
I think Planet Terror ended, and he was, like, ready to leave, and I was like,
oh, no.
Wait.
You're like, don't.
Don't. But wait, there's more.
Ugh, but of course, listeners, it's our time to let you know, of course, how this movie came to be. It is a very interesting story, as we talked about, double feature. But this comes from the imagination of one of my favorites, the good old boy from Tennessee. The Footman.
Thank you for saying it so I didn't have to.
Oh, that's right.
Dude loves the little piggies, man.
He loves his feet. There's so many feet shots in this movie.
It's funny because I'm just like, yeah, this is only slightly more than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to me. Like in terms of the feet shots.
There's like, I think, two distinct foot shots that I remember from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This, I was like, okay, we get it. We fucking get it. But that's
yeah,
fine.
Like, there's that one shot where the Jungle Julia character, her leg gets ripped off and, like, flies off. And, like, every time I see that shot, I can just imagine, like, Tarantino, like, personally doing the cast for, like, her leg and foot. You know, it's like, no, I'll do it.
He's like, no, I want to be involved in this movie.
Not enough texture on the toes, I'm sorry.
And then taking the prop home to do, I don't even know what. Because that was a good-looking fake leg.
That. And then he had to show Kurt Russell how to lick Rosario Dawson's feet.
Oh, my God. Personally.
No, Kurt, you're not doing it right. This is how you do it.
The tongue edge is just not... You got to believe.
Do it like you mean it.
Anyway,
so Quentin Tarantino, obviously, from what we're talking about here, he was destined to become a filmmaker. Because this boy, he was named after a character on the TV show Gunsmoke, which was, of course, Burt Reynolds' character, Quint Astor, if you guys are wondering. And he's the son of an actor and the stepson of a musician. Growing up, of course, in good old Torrance, California.
Oh, he's local.
He's a local boy. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he wasn't born there, but he is a local boy.
I mean, he grew up local. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. He, of course, as a lot of people know, worked in a video store in good old Manhattan Beach for half a fucking decade. 5 years, and I know a lot of us have wasted 5 years in our 20s here and there, so...
I mean, it's true. Yeah. I like what you're saying, a lot of you know this, but I know nothing about, like, him as,
I say as a fanboy.
I know,
heart.
You're, yes. You're... That's because you're a Quentin Tarantino nerd. I'm like, I know none of this.
Yeah, yeah, good old... I feel like, yeah, his 20s journey, I'm just like, all right, I felt that before, yeah. So,
been there.
We've all had those jobs where, like, why did I do that for so long?
Yeah, for me, it was working at a sex shop.
Yeah. Coffee shops. Anyway. Oh, and optician. What the fuck? Andrew,
what was your weird 20s job?
It's like, well, I mean, I actually really enjoyed it, but I worked at an exotic bird store.
That's
pretty fucking cool.
I love that. Okay. I mean, to be fair, I did enjoy working at a sex shop, but like after I left, I was like, I can't, like... Okay, I'm done. I've seen enough.
See, glasses and coffee for me. I'm already that in my core.
It's true. You are 90% coffee, and you wear glasses.
10% glasses. Yes. Yeah. But of course, because of his 5-year stint in the video store, he developed a pretty... I mean, and of course, his family being film nerds, he had this very encyclopedic knowledge of films that he used, of course, to recommend to some patrons whenever they came through. So, he also did try his hand at acting, being cast in a small part on an episode of Golden Girls, Alex.
The Golden Girls.
Which, actually helped him finance his first film, Reservoir Dogs, which, I don't know, it's such a good movie.
I saw for the very first time, my little brother came to stay with me for a weekend, a month or so ago, in November, December, I think. And he...
December was like 3 months ago, Alex.
Whatever. Time is a fucking construct. Fuck off. Point is he was here, and he had a weekend plan of like, I want to watch as many crime movies as possible. So, and I love The Big Lebowski. The Big Lebowski is one of my favorite movies ever. So I showed him that.
Oh, yeah.
And, and then he watched Usual Suspects, and then he watched Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, he's getting the good ones.
Yeah. And then I was like, do you want to watch a really trashy one? And he was like, sure. And I showed him Boondock Saints.
Oh, wow. That's 90s weekend right there.
It was great. It was so good. Because, like, I loved, like, you know, shitty crime movies. And not to say, like, Reservoir Dogs is, like, shitty or anything, because I'd never seen it.
Uh-huh.
So I was, like, sitting there watching it. I was, like, making cookies. Like, it was a great weekend. Like, yeah.
Oh, Andrew, though.
Oh, yeah.
Boondock Saints is pretty divisive. I want to see your take on that one, because this is...
I enjoyed Boondock Saints. It definitely had some really fucking funny moments, like when the guy shoots the cat.
Yeah.
You know? And it's pretty wild, although, like, I saw the documentary about the director, and, like, it made me absolutely fucking hate him.
Really? Okay, I haven't seen it. I know nothing about it. I just watched it. Like, I remember seeing it once in my freshman year of college and being like, this is trashy. Like, it's, like, feel-good trash where I'm like, this just gives me good emotional payoff
at the end. It's literal Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
It totally is.
Yeah, it is. It's just so, like, I'm like, this is stupid, but I love it. And the more I watched it as I got older, I was just like, oh, this is like extra bad. Like, this is like extra large bad.
But for a lot of edgelords in high school during when I went,
oh my god,
they were about that shit.
Did they just shape their whole personality?
They're like, oh, I want tattoos all over here.
They want like Latin tattoos on their hands and shit. Oh my god. I know someone who actually has those tattoos, which, by the way, I was like,
oh god.
No. I was definitely like the fucking, what do you call it, contrarian back in the day. So I was like, this movie sucks.
Whatever.
And then as I grew older, I'm just like, no, I don't like it that much. Oh, shit.
It's not a good movie. I can admit that. But the point is...
It's not very good.
I watched Reservoir Dogs. I also love Tim Roth.
Tim Roth. Oh, my God.
Like, he's great.
So that whole time, I was just like, this is good. Even though it was like passed it on the floor 90% of the movie. But that's fine.
In the stickiest pool of blood you'll ever see in cinema.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'm like, wow, you're really like, where your blood is outside your body, buddy.
That looks like your boots will just fucking make that. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, for sure. For sure. But of course, during this time, he also tried his hand at horror, surprisingly, with his first ever writing assignment being the wonderful, amazing, I love this film from my heart, Childhood, From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh, yeah, that's a good
Hell yeah.
Dude.
Great movie.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we frequently talk about From Dusk Till Dawn.
Because one of the first boners ever, Selma Hayek, with goddamn snake.
The
goddamn snake. I'm like, what am I feeling
I have a shirt. I have a shirt of that, of her, like, with the snake, with the snake.
You walk around that in East L.A., people can be high-fiving your ass.
So good.
Ugh. But of course, when you add his second feature film, Pulp Fiction, to the mix, you have what is very likely one of the most insane breakthroughs in modern Hollywood history. And a lesson that the industry knows all too well. Violence sells, especially if you make it well. So, and yeah, Pulp Fiction.
You made that rhyme a little too well.
Oh, did I?
Well, sells well, blah, blah, blah.
Too high to make a rhyme right now. So I was going to try to counter with that, but my mind isn't there. So
it was a happy accident.
There you go. See?
Let it go.
I wasn't deliriously writing this last minute. No. So from here on out, Quentin Tarantino would actually become a genre all of his own. And while
it's a classic Anthony Fuentes episode, ladies and gentlemen.
I think you were looking for his.
It's a classic. God.
While he done takes on the revenge film, Alex. I actually lost my spot. Of course, he'd also done takes on the crime drama and even a good old adaptation with Jackie Brown. He still hadn't quite knocked horror off his list when it came to directing. So, remember, he wrote From Dusk Till Dawn. He didn't actually Robert Rodriguez is the one that has a stamp on it.
My dad made sure I was very aware of that because I knew he was in the movie and I knew he wrote it. But then I was like, did he direct it? And my dad, who I was watching with at the time, he was like, no. And I was just like, okay, I'm sorry, fuck.
He's like, listen, daughter.
He wrote True Romance, too. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie, but yeah. Great. Oh, dude, it's so good. It's got Christian Slater and stuff. Ooh. And it's it's very 90s. And it's got Tarantino all over it because he wrote that.
Directed by a good old Tony Scott, too. Ooh. So that was like some... And that's like the most Tony Scott movie
Patricia Arquette.
Patricia Arquette, that's who was in it, yes.
Tony Scott.
Yeah, you got Tom Sizemore. Yeah, it was a good one.
I will have to give it a... It's on Hulu.
It's 90s AF. I'm going to tell you that right now. Yeah,
very.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, this looks like very pulpy.
Yeah, it's got a lot of like hints of what's the Natural Born Killers in it?
Yeah,
too.
I am getting some Natural Born Killers vibes. And he also watched Natural Born Killers that weekend. My brother, when he was here,
oh wow,
like, it was just like all like the quintessential. Like I'm like, please don't let this shape your entire personality because you will become insufferable. But
show it to a teenager. Oh yeah,
I mean,
oh, but I mean. Going with that, though, I remember Tarantino did have actual problems with his adaptation, with the adaptation of True Romance. I think he wanted it to actually be done a little bit differently.
Mm.
But, of course, from Dusk Till Dawn, he loved Robert Rodriguez's take on it. Like, he actually was fully on board with that enough to be
Is that what made them, like, bosom buddies?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. They were. He was just like, oh, you do my script well. Yay. But, of course... You know, this led to a history of them doing genre films and working very, very well together, which sparked this whole Grindhouse event, which was ambitious, to say the least. Now,
a little bit.
Senor Parker, what happened there?
Whoopah!
Yeah, let us know.
Well,
let us know.
Grindhouse theaters date back to the 1920s, originally more akin to burlesque shows and definitely in the seedier parts of town.
This is in the 20s. Yeah. That's some hardcore fucking jazz. Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's true.
Like fucking sax is going. They're just like,
I can't mimic that, so just imagine that. I was just like,
no, it's not it. No, that's the 70s jazz right there.
Yeah, the 1920s, like,
well, I never.
Gotta be all like...
I do believe I'm getting the vapors.
Your guys' interpretation of the 1920s is really funny.
Oh, boy.
The bees.
All right, well, as time went on, their programming turned into something called the grind policy, which meant a steady stream of exploitation films, splatter films, low-budget horror, dubbed martial arts films, and, of course... good old American pornography.
Uh-huh. The grind policy is also the policy adopted across high schools across America.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yes. Definitely. That Sadie Hawkins dance, you can't not have the grind policy there.
Oh, my God.
Well, because of the cheap tickets and not so studio-friendly programming, these theaters thrived until the advent of cable television, which offered similar mature programming right at home.
Yeah.
You can get your good old-fashioned pornography right in the comfort of your own home, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and you won't get arrested like Pee-wee Herman or Fred Willard.
Oh.
Not Pee-wee.
Wait, Fred Willard? Oh.
Yeah, didn't Fred Willard get busted for, like, jerking off or something?
I think you're right. I do remember a Fred Willard mugshot from a long time ago. Oh, Alex, give us the arrest record of Fred Willard, please, if you can. Where is it? She's checking. She's checking right now.
Yes, on July 18th, 2012, Willard was arrested on suspicion of engaging in a misdemeanor lewd act in an adult theater on Santa Monica Boulevard.
I'm impressed that that happened in 2012. Where you can find somewhere where you can do that is amazing to me.
Or that he could even get it up. The dude was old.
Dude. 2012? Yeah.
No, I actually respect Fred Willard more for this.
No, I mean, like, the balls it takes to go into, like, a porn theater like that as, like, a huge celebrity.
Yeah.
2012.
Like, this is nostalgic for me.
He died last year.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I hate to speak ill of dead. But that was actually, that's bit-centric. So, you know, it's funny.
No, the balls on this man, Jesus. Which is what the police also said when they came. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
That's what I'm here for.
Huh? All right, so Quentin Tarantino honored this era in film by setting up double feature screenings at his home and even included trailers before films.
I mean, if you've been to the New Beverly, you know this process.
I haven't.
I still have not been there
You've
yet.
You've never taken me, Anthony.
What?
Okay. We haven't gone.
When we're all vaccinated, three of us are going to go to fucking El Coyote. We're going to get some goddamn margaritas. We're getting the $15 one because that's the best one. And then we're totally going to watch a movie at the New Beverly because those trailers, the cartoon ahead, it is an experience.
I've been wanting to do it.
It's wonderful. And the
We used to have an old theater back home in Tampa called the Tampa Theater, and they would play like old reels, you know, like you'd see Jaws, and they had a summer movie thing that they did, and they'd have the cartoons before, and they had like a full orchestra. It was a really fun experience.
You know who also used to do that, the full orchestra experience?
Who?
The Frida.
They did.
I miss the Frida so much. We say it all the time, but I miss the Frida.
Our local Santa Ana theater.
Well, my local, you're not so much.
That's true. I would still drive down for it, though.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, man. Downtown
Santa
Ana.
They're still doing drive-in events, but it's just not the same.
This whole Grindhouse Theater is really hurting my heart now. I know. Let's just keep going, guys. I can't.
All right. So during one of these screenings at his home in 2003, Robert Rodriguez noticed that Tarantino owned the exact same double feature poster he did, which had the titles Rock All Night and Drag Strip on display.
Interesting.
Yes. He then looked over to Tarantino and said, I always wanted to do a double feature. Hey, why don't you direct one and I'll do the other?
I love that is probably exactly how the conversation went.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
it was
definitely.
Just like, why don't you do one and I'll do the other? And then suddenly history was made.
Yeah, there's no way the studios will say no.
Right.
It's like, look at us. It's like, we're at the top of our game. Fuck it, let's just get experimental.
Right? There's like, I just did Kill Bill. He's like, I just did Spy Kids. Let's fucking do it.
Yeah. They owe us. And Tarantino agreed and told him they should call it Grindhouse.
Ah, yes.
Yep. While Rodriguez always thought the posters for the trailer were better than the actual movies, they now had the opportunity to use their skill sets to honor the genre.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I gotta say, Grindhouse posters look fucking awesome.
They're pretty
always
rad.
Look very, very cool. I remember, like, as a Ute, seeing them like in theaters and stuff, or like seeing them around, and just thinking they look very, very cool. And then like my dad just like having to like drag me away, being like, "No, you can't."
You're like, "But her shirt's only ripped off a little bit.
It's only barely covering her nipples." Yeah, mm-hmm. Cool.
See the good old Army of Darkness poster to kind of have a little reflection of these OG fucking Grindhouse posters. Ah. And also our episode that three of us did, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Call back.
Okay, so when Rodriguez and Tarantino had their first discussion about their Grindhouse movies, Tarantino already had the entire film that he wanted mapped out in his mind. So he was just like, I know what the fuck I want to do.
How expected, yes.
he's a man with a plan.
Yeah, right. He'd always had a fascination with Hollywood stuntmen and the way they had modified their cars to make them, I mean, well, death-proof.
Death-proof, yes.
The cars, often some good old American muscle, were rigged in a way that a driver can survive slamming headfirst into a wall up to 60 miles per hour and survive. He felt he could use this concept in a slasher and that it was different enough to break a few of the genre's rules, which he's not incorrect, but it is equally terrifying.
Oh, yeah. There's something very scary about a guy who will kill you, like,
with a car,
with his car, with him in it.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Like, that's someone who is, like, clearly, like, I will fuck myself up to kill you.
Oh, my gosh. That is a level of, crazy.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah. And absolutely.
They picked the right boy for it, I
said. Oh, my fucking God. So on this, he says, quote, with the exception of women in prison films, there's no other genre quite as rigid.
That is so specific. That's so specific.
Is that a pun?
It could be. Knowing him, it probably is. It was actually Robert Rodriguez who suggested the name after hearing Tarantino say it while describing the story. Like, you should call it Death Proof. Yeah,
you keep saying Death Proof, man. You know what? Good call.
Mm-hmm. You should go with it. The director also wasn't a fan of CG, so this film was going to have real car chases in it. Dun, dun, dun. Tarantino thought the car chase in Terminator 2 was the last good one, but had a special admiration for the car crash sequence in Final Destination 2, which is pretty much, I think, otherwise a kind of shitty movie.
Not the best Final Destination, but that opening scene scares the fuck
out of me. I think it scares the fuck out of a lot of people.
Dude. I think about it whenever I'm driving on the freeway and I see, like, a truck with shit in the back
anything.
Of it.
Yes. It could be poles. It could be wood. It could be, like, anything. And I'm like, I need
anything
to get out
of this
lane.
Anything that could become a projectile.
Yes. Yes.
Anything. It could be, like, just a normal truck. Like, it could just be, like, a Dodge for all I care. And, like, there could be, like, something hanging out the back. And I'm like, I need to get out of this because I've also seen Twister.
Yeah.
And I've seen flying projectiles flying at windshields.
I'm like, I don't want a rake taking my shit out.
Exactly.
Go get off and take the streets to your gardening opportunity, please.
Oh, man. So Tarantino opted to be his own cinematographer as well for the first time in his career.
That's pretty bold, actually.
I mean, he did a lot for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing a lot of hats on this production.
He acted
this
in
production.
It. He did the cinematography. He wrote it. He directed.
I feel like, you know, him being like, well, grindhouse directors would just fucking do anything anyways, right? So with the low budget. So yeah. He went full authentic.
That is true.
Yeah,
he went method.
Yeah.
Went method.
So both directors would actually help each other direct their films, providing notes and overseeing the process. According to actress Mary Shelton, Tarantino had a lot of involvement in Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror, but would always defer to his colleague when it came to final decisions.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I've only seen bits and pieces of Planet Terror. I've actually never seen it.
Oh, I love that one.
I know.
It's good.
I've seen bits
and
pieces.
It's really good.
But I can see the influences in between, flowing between.
I just love that these two respect that much of each other. They're like,
yes.
Yeah, right? That's a good fucking relationship right there.
Totally.
Right? And it comes out
definitely
on
is.
Screen.
Yeah, because you never want to have an argument in the writer's room. That is, when two people, like, when one person will not defer to the other, that is such a pain in the ass.
Oh, where it's just like, can we just come to a general consensus, please?
Like, do you believe
just
this?
Just fucking compromise!
Oh, no, that's when, like, egos, like, get in the way, and then it's like, no, we have to measure our dicks right now.
Some costs, they're just like, all right, so I've already committed to this volume, but you're also committing, and I'm not going to let my shit fucking roll down. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, been there. So, for the role of stuntman Mike McKay, Tarantino attempted to cast quite a few people, actually. So, the list is John Travolta, Willem Dafoe, John Malkovich, Mickey Rourke, Ron Perlman, Bruce Willis, and Sylvester Stallone. But each and every one of these motherfuckers was busy with other projects at the time.
Yeah, Bruce Willis was busy with Planet Terror!
And old Sylvester Stallone, I think, was the Expendables around this time, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and then
imagine that with John Malkovich.
Right, okay.
I think I would have been more terrified.
I would have actually loved Willem Dafoe in this shit.
I don't think John Malkovich would have had the swagger, though. That's
yeah.
the
That's
thing.
True. You know? He would have been more of like, yeah, it's true. He would have been a little bit more like manic, I think.
Dude, but like
Ron Perlman?
Oh, he'd been great.
Ron Perlman would have been perfect.
Ron Perlman would have been
like,
fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he can pull off suave and crazy and threatening.
Yeah,
you know?
He can.
Yeah. And
a lot of the other ones, it's like, I don't see like this guy convincing, like, you know, a girl to leave the bar with him and then also being insane, you know?
I see.
Yeah.
I can kind of see Willem Dafoe a little bit, but by the creep factor. Kind of like the pressure he would put on somebody with just his eyes. Like, there's a creep factor that would be enhanced with him in the role.
He'd have to be able to rein in his fucking crazy eyes, man. He has crazy fucking eyes.
Yeah.
And I think
I wouldn't go home with him.
No, definitely not.
But if Ron Perlman was like, chatting me up at a bar and like I needed a ride home, like, I guess.
See, but the thing that kind of throws me off though is that the character becomes kind of pathetic towards the end, right? Willem Dafoe can kind of pull that off. Perlman's a little too badass for that.
It's true. Ron Perlman, I don't know if he could be like, I don't know if he could lay there and just be like, no.
But Dafoe, like his, that gradual escalation to madness, I can totally see that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hard
points were made.
But Kurt Russell kind of does it all.
Kurt Russell, I will say, did a very good job
playing
both parts.
Yeah, because, of course, one day Tarantino just had the thought in his head while doing this. The literal sentence he said was, when is Kurt Russell going to be badass again? Because at the time he was,
statement.
Well, he was doing movies like Miracle and like all these other, Glory, I think was the other one. Like Disney kind of
like. He was doing more like, you know.
Yeah, he wasn't Snake fucking Plissken anymore. You know? He was,
yeah, and he wasn't the fucking guy in The Thing anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. So Tarantino was
the fucking
was
man in charge. Big old swinging dick.
That's right. Yeah.
He wasn't it's true.
Well, Tarantino, I remember his justification seeing an interview was like, I know what Kurt Russell can do. Audiences now don't know what Kurt Russell can do.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, I'm gonna make something for him. So yeah. However, there are more people cast in this movie. So stunt woman Zoe Bell she impressed Quentin Tarantino so much as Uma Thurman's stunt double on Kill Bill that he actually wrote the lead role with her in mind. So he didn't want to cast anybody else in that role, which is pretty cool.
It's funny because I recognized her as an actress before a stunt person. Like, I'm like, I recognize you from other things. Like, I don't know what I've seen you in, but I definitely recognize you.
Yeah, well, actually, she would appear in most of his other films after this.
Yeah.
Like, she would become essentially a Tarantino staple, which, again, very, very cool.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys, man. When he finds someone he likes to work with, he works with them. It's just like, I think he's had the same editor for every single movie he's ever done.
Yeah.
You know?
He's one of those people.
Lawrence Kasdan or something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have a quote from her coming up, too, actually. It's very funny.
He's one of those people. Once he, like, finds what he likes, he's like, okay, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
And he's done shopping around.
But he also has such a knowledge of an actor. He's just like, I can build several characters around you. You're not just one thing, which is pretty cool. But of course, she actually originally thought her role was going to be more of a cameo than anything, but came to the realization that it was kind of a big deal when she saw a poster with her name next to Kurt Russell and Rosario Dawson. Like, that's when she was like, I'm up there?
Yeah.
And of course, Rose McGowan and Eli Roth were cast in both Death Proof and Planet Terror.
When I saw Eli Roth in Death Proof, I was just like, oh, hey, I know you.
Dude, 2007, Eli Roth was like such a bro, too.
Oh,
like,
my
just
God. Just
the meaner, big time.
Right?
Dude, he was.
But he's also like from, you know, check out our Cabin Fever episode for more, but he's like fucking nerd, too. Like, it's a
dork.
Weird mix.
Like, he's a massive dork, but like every
he's like
time.
He's like that weird Jack nerd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
he's like
definitely.
A gym nerd.
Every time he opens his mouth, I'm just like, oh my God, you sound like a bro!
Dude, but that's why him and Tarantino fucking get along.
Tarantino,
Rodriguez all together.
I get it. I still haven't watched season 2 of Eli Roth's History of Horror yet.
I gotta watch that.
I've heard very good things, but like, I do appreciate him a lot, even though like, when sometimes some of the things he does, I'm just like, I just want to punch you in the face.
Yeah. That being said, it's still Green Inferno. Eli Roth. Nah, man.
Oh! So good.
Really? I did not like it.
Really?
Oh, I loved Green Inferno. But
opinions. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really weigh in. But
I fucking loved Green Inferno, but that's only because I mean, objectively, kind of a stupid movie, but I always really loved those exploitation jungle cannibal movies.
Okay,
like Cannibal Ferox and Holocaust. And
can we take a quick aside for a moment?
Yeah.
Have you seen that...
Cannibal Holocaust?
No, I mean, not that. I mean, yes, that, but I'm talking about the iceberg thing that's been floating around.
No, what is that about?
Okay, have you heard, do you know what I'm talking about, Andrew?
No.
Okay, there's this thing floating around. Let me pull it up.
This is good. This is knowledge I've been trying to figure out for, I actually haven't been trying, because I probably could look it up, but I've seen it on my YouTube feed, so
yes.
I want to know what this is.
Okay, so it's like this iceberg, like, it's like a meme, basically, where it's like a picture of an iceberg, and it's like 8 different layers. And then, like, at the top, it has like your typical horror. And at the very, very bottom, it has, like, basically movies that are illegal to only watch.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
For context, like, level, like, 2 or level 3, or, like, level 2 is, like Human Centipede. Like,
okay.
That's, like, level 2.
Damn.
Level, like, 4 is Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so, and there's 8 levels.
Oh, okay.
So, it gets to the point where, like, and, like, I think Serbian film is, like, 5.
Wow, that looks pretty fucked up. Oh, boy.
So, they're, like, so, it's a very interesting, I need to, like.
No, it's always being recommended to me. I gotta check that out, actually.
Yeah, it's recently kind of, like, made a circulation. I'm surprised you hadn't seen it, because it originally circulated on Reddit.
Yeah, no, the video was, like, an hour and something long. So.
Okay, so funny. YouTube suggested the same video to me. But no, it's basically it's like an iceberg thing that basically breaks down exploitation and horror films from like decently disgusting to illegal to watch and or own, where it's like literal snuff films. And I'm like, okay, that's a little extreme.
Oh, now I want to watch this.
Yeah, those ones, they're fucked up, because the directors, they were like the Italian directors, for some reason they really liked killing animals on camera.
Yeah.
You know?
See, because I
and
I
it's
had,
like,
oof. No, keep going.
I kind of get it because, like, yeah. I can see how it blurs the line, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like if you see something actually die and then you see, like, someone die horribly, that feels more real right after. But
yes.
But, you know, there's all sorts of stories about, like, the productions of those where, like, actors were getting pissed off and, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Even there was a court case, too, for Cannibal Holocaust, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because I saw a little bit of Cannibal Holocaust, and it kind of fucked me up a little bit, honestly. It was pretty bad. Like, pretty, like, the turtle scene in particular. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really
ooh,
bad.
That one got me.
Okay, I found it. It's like a list challenges thing. Okay, where basically it breaks it down. Mm-hmm. But, that's not it. But, yeah, like, Saw is the first one.
Damn.
Like, the house that Jack built is the second.
Okay, well, that seems like a good thing to dive into a little later.
Yes, I'm sorry to start this digression, but I want to watch the YouTube video, and I want to find the original image, because it's, like, severely fucked up. Like, yeah. But yeah, I was just wondering if you guys had heard of it. One of the movies that I want to cover for my birth month is, like, on level 3 or 4.
Oh, fun! Okay, considering what you told me 2 is right now, so
yeah,
yes, good.
So, I mean, I don't think it's that bad. But I guess other people do.
But look out for that one in June, guys.
Woo! anyway, sorry for the digression. I was just curious
great.
As we were talking about exploitation films.
From what I've heard from our fans, they enjoy our digressions. So that's okay. Where the hell was that?
Sorry.
It's okay. Anyways,
I think you just said Rose McGowan and Eli Roth.
There you go.
We were talking about Eli Roth, which led to the digression.
Yes, yes. Back to the actual Grindhouse aspect of it, though. To further emulate this shit, they both actually damaged their films to give it that kind of 70s Grindhouse vibe, which I thought was pretty cool.
Intentionally,
yes. So what you're
I like that. Mm-hmm. It does give it a very cool look to it as I was watching
it. That's really cool. I didn't know that. I thought they just threw a fucking filter on it or something. I didn't know that they straight up, like, damaged the the negatives. Dude, that's pretty cool.
This is Tarantino. He's like, no, I don't want any CG imagery, nothing on that. Yeah, no. True. I want it. Like, let me fucking put the mark in there and cut it, and it's gone forever now. Bam.
Oh, man.
But of course, they also utilize missing reels, coming up with the idea based on their experience watching an old Italian crime movie starring Oliver Reed.
Of course, they did.
Yeah. They literally, they keep watching movies together and they're like, we can do that.
Let's do it.
But the version of Death Proof in the Grindhouse double feature was actually cut by around half an hour to make room for both movies, with the longest version clocking in at a good old 127 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long boy right there. Of course, this thing, eventually, there's more to it. So, Senior Parker, what else happened with this Grindhouse film?
So, included in the final version of Grindhouse was a series of trailers for fake movies, which included Werewolf Women of the SS, Thanksgiving, Machete, Don't, and Hobo with a Shotgun.
Do we want to talk about these now, or are we talking about them in discussion?
I want to talk about it right now. Because fuck, I want to see Werewolf Women of the SS. I really want to see that.
I was watching that and I was like, is that Sherry Moon Zombie?
Yes. Oh, and then, but Nicolas Cage is Fu Manchu.
Yeah, and Udo Kier's in it too, man. I love him.
Dude. Oh, man.
Yeah. That was the Rob Zombie one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that one I can totally see him, like, kind of actually pulling off. He would do that.
That definitely has Rob Zombie written all over it.
I mean, yeah. The second I saw Sherry Moon Zombie, I was just like, okay, like, this is a Rob Zombie production.
Oh, yeah. Thanksgiving was mine. That, to me, I was just like, that one feels Eli Roth-y as hell.
I was just like, I was kind of cringing the entire time. I was just like, this is disgusting. Disgusting.
But, like, the level of dark humor, like, straight up.
For sure. Like,
the beheading. The beheading was so good.
Whatever her name was, like, Jenny or whatever the fuck. Like, giving Eli Roth a blowjob and then his head getting cut off and then meeting the other jock and then kissing him and then his
after she blew someone.
Yeah! getting his head cut off, and I was just like, okay, this is funny. No, like, it, just a little subtle, like, elbow jab humor. Like, it's just like, this is a horror movie, get it? Haha. Like, that was funny.
Yeah, that was a take on Halloween, right?
Yeah.
I assume that okay.
Like, there was even, like, some, like, Halloween-esque, like, music in there. Like, it was, like, kind of like, like, oh, yeah.
But I would also say, don't... has such good, like, exploitation imagery. And that's Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright did that one.
Yeah.
Which is fucking insane to me. But I can't defer, like, a plot from it, but I know whatever it is I want to see.
It was... the vibe I was getting from it was, like, a haunted house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, haunted
type
house.
Thing.
Give me like some 13 Elvira, Ghosts like, type stuff. I'm in it. In it.
For Don't, I was getting, like, a haunted house vibe thing. I was getting, house vibes, like the actual
'70s
movie House.
Yes,
exactly that. Yeah,
I got some like Houseu vibes. I liked that one also because also at the very beginning you get like a brief moment of Jason Isaacs, and I was like, hey. Yeah, they were all pretty good. The only one I was kind of like, which coincidentally did become one of the ones that became a feature length movie was Hobo with a Shotgun.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever. But
I gotta say though,
that had real what is it? Street Trash? What that was like one of the first Melt movies. I think it was Street Trash. It reminded me a lot of Street Trash.
I have no idea.
No, what's Street Trash?
Oh my god! Oh, that's great. it's a movie about like there's this liquor store, and they find this old case of this, you know, like real cheap, like hobo liquor. It's like Mad Dog, like 2020, okay. But it's called like Viper
that.
Or something. And then like they're all drinking it, and it for some reason it makes their bodies just like break down and they like melt.
Oh,
and they turn to like slime.
That's a great concept. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I will also say though, I felt like the trailer for Machete was better than the actual movie.
Really? Yeah. I've never seen it. I've never seen Machete Kills. I've never seen any of it.
I hadn't seen Machete Kills, though. That one I kind of want to watch. Because it wasn't bad, but this trailer is kind of gold.
The trailer's great.
Yeah.
Like, Cheech fucking Marin in there.
That was cool.
Be like, God has
I'll
mercy,
see what
I don't.
Do.
Yeah. So, which is also great, because him and Danny Trejo, both are in Spy Kids, are just like, which, okay.
And Desperado.
Okay, but also for context.
Yes.
Desperado's the shit.
Let's also put this into context. I'm significantly younger than, you know, current audiences here. I was a child when Spy Kids was popular.
Oh, I was a teenager.
Yeah. I was like a kid. Like Spy Kids was directed. Like I was the target demographic.
Yeah.
So like for me growing up, Danny Trejo, I was just like, oh, the uncle from Spy Kids who was like a total badass. He was Machete in Spy Kids.
That's true. He was Uncle Machete.
Like that was him.
Man, I gotta say, Spy Kids still hits pretty fucking hard. It's still good.
I saw
it recently, and I was like, "Damn, this one actually kind of held up."
Dude,
like,
one and two are good movies.
The second one's fine.
The second one has Steve Buscemi in that bitch.
Yes, it does. Saying like the most like silly, silly bullshit.
The fucking hands and dude,
and the thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
What do you call? But I see. With my Latino-ass family, they would watch anything that had, like, any kind of representation in it. So, my childhood Robert Rodriguez movies were From Dusk Till Dawn and Desperado.
Fair enough.
Seen them at, like, 9 and shit. I'm just like, yeah, fucking kill them with the knives.
Yeah. Also, just, like, growing up, like, watching Spy Kids, it was, like, really bad because, like, I know I was supposed to, like, relate to, like, the kids, but I was, like, in love with... Because Carla... Gugino?
Yeah.
And Antonio Banderas are the parents, and I was like in love with both of them. I was like, oh my god.
Wait, wasn't the villain too? He was the one of the doctors, right?
What? Oh, Alan. Wait, what?
Wasn't he? I'm tripping.
One of the doctors.
For Doctor Who?
No. Alan Cumming. Is...
Oh, it was Alan Cumming.
Yeah.
I'm tripping. Okay, I thought it was the other guy that was in Goblet of Fire.
But no, okay, I was actually correct. Danny Trejo that plays the uncle, and his name is Machete.
Yeah.
Uncle Machete. Uh-huh. Okay. He plays Machete.
That character's been around. Oh, yeah.
So it's so good. Like,
that's just so funny that came from like a kid's movie.
Right?
Yeah. They were like, let's take a character from a literal child's movie and just make him like what he actually does.
Now I want to watch Machete.
Yeah. I love that shot in the Machete. I love that shot in the Machete trailer where the guy's just like, "Where's my wife and daughter?" And then they're like topless, like you know, making out with Machete fucking, and like a waterfall.
That whole scene, I was just like, "Oh, that's bad."
That's fucking good. Oh yeah,
it was good shit.
I'm glad we're talking about these now.
Yeah, out of all of them, I'm like, okay, Machete and Hobo with a Shotgun, yes, those did go on to be feature-length films. However, Werewolf Women of the SS, I need it.
Yeah. Need Thanksgiving. Big time. Or Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. We covered
Not
Thanksgiving. Yeah.
We covered it. Been there. Done that.
I know. I almost said Thanksgiving when I read that line.
Right?
So, I feel ya.
But I would totally watch a Thanksgiving done exactly to Eli Roth's specifications. I'm down.
Yes.
I'm
down.
I'm done with Thanksgiving themed horror films. Thanksgiving fucking did it for me. I'm done.
Wait till we cover Thanksgiving 3. Oh, that's funny. Okay.
All right. So outside of the US and Canada, Death Proof and Planet Terror were released separately and were shown as their extended versions.
Oh, all right. I mean, I guess that's a fair
compromise. I personally really loved the experience of like going to see it in theaters and having it be that double feature with the trailers in it.
Yeah.
I got to experience something like I never otherwise would have experienced.
Yeah, especially at like the studio scale. Like it's like done as polished and good as it can possibly be.
Yeah.
No, I missed it during that time. I was gonna watch it and then I think I was just, you know, poor at the time, so I didn't. I had to pay for all my movie tickets. It sucked. So yeah.
Oh no.
No. Once you get that job, your parents are like, hey, we're not. You're doing it on your own. You're fine.
Yeah.
No, I missed it. I don't know what the fuck happened. But yeah. But they sell the Blu-ray. I'll go and find it.
Oh yeah. Sold separately, of course. That annoyed the shit out of me when they came out because I loved both of them and I was like, okay, time to buy the DVD at Walmart, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what? They don't have one?
Nope.
I guess I got to make that money because the movies did not make that much money.
Whoa, which we'll find
out
right
$30 million
now.
Budget. Yes. Yeah. All right, so critics absolutely loved Grindhouse, with many debating whether Tarantino or Rodriguez had the better film. Well, I guess Alex hasn't seen Planet Terror yet. What do you think?
Hard to say because I used to always love Planet Terror more, but after my recent watch of Death Proof, I'm kind of leaning Death Proof. So I don't know.
Death Proof really it's a good one. It's really good.
It's a good
Lines. There's some parts from Planet Terror that I really love, like where you know she's got the machine gun leg.
Yeah,
I mean,
What's
funny about Planet Terror is that image is like seared into my fucking brain. I've never seen the movie. I don't know when I saw like the poster for it, but that image, it, for some reason, is very iconic for me. Go figure.
Yeah, it's a dope ass fucking image.
I mean, it is.
Yeah.
But also, like again, like growing up, not really exposed to horror. So I'm telling you, I must have passed it in like a movie theater in like 2007, and like I was just like seared into brain. File this away for later. You're gonna fucking need it.
See, I haven't seen Planet Terror in so long, so it's hard for me to assess, but I did like it being a zombie movie at that scale. It was kind of fucking cool. Like, that was pretty dope. But at the same time, I was down on Death Proof for the longest time, and then over the years, it, like, really started elevating, and this last screening pushed it over for me.
Interesting.
So, I think I would say Death Proof. How about you?
Definitely Death Proof.
Yeah.
Definitely Death Proof. Death Proof, definitely the better movie. I got Rain Man there for a second. Death Proof, it's so much fun. I remember when the first time I saw it, I was like, this is boring, because I just watched fucking Planet Terror, and then it's like this Talking Heads movie, but then I eventually came around to it.
That's the same experience here. Yeah, exactly. It's hard.
Interesting.
Because Planet Terror is fast.
Okay.
It's like a lot going on.
Okay, so
Death Proof's more.
Would it be better to watch Death Proof first?
You already watched Death Proof first.
I understand, but I mean, like, if I was supposed to recommend a double feature to someone, I'd be like, okay, watch Death Proof first and then watch Planet Terror.
I don't know.
I think I would watch Death Proof first because Death Proof's like kind of a slow burn, and then you just have this like orgasm of dripping goop in Planet Terror.
And also, I will say, like, for Death Proof, the payoff by the end of the movie, I was fucking hype as shit by the end of it. I was like, okay, let's fucking go.
With that song? Ooh.
So good.
It's like, fuck him up.
Yeah. Kick his ass. All right.
All right, so Owen Gleiberman of Entertainment Weekly stated, it summons the most crackerjack pop charge of any movie with Tarantino's name on it since Pulp Fiction.
What does that mean?
I was going to say, what the fuck does that even mean? Crackerjack pop charge? Is this like a dated fucking term or something?
Oh, whatever, Gleiberman. I mean, he's had some pretty interesting reviews in the past when we put him up anyways.
Put him in the fucking locker!
Yeah.
Shut up, Gleiberman.
fucking nerd.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god. Yeah, I don't even know what that means, but I think it's positive?
I think, yeah, no,
I'm
it
pretty
is.
Sure,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mike LaSalle of the San Francisco Chronicle stated, the Rodriguez segment is terrific and shows a director in complete control of tone, image, and story.
Okay.
What is the Rodriguez segment?
Planet Terror.
So, okay. Yeah. Oh, they're talking about the whole. I'm
talking
sorry,
about
I was in Death Proof,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. Our boy Roger Ebert gave the film a whole 2.5 stars, but awarded Death Proof 3 stars on its own. Of the package overall, he stated Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof and Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror play as if Night of the Living Dead and Faster Pussycat Kill Kill were combined on a double bill under the parentage of the Dark Sperm of Vengeance.
Jesus Christ,
what
Rod.
Does that mean?
The Dark Sperm of Vengeance is probably my favorite thing I've ever heard Roger Ebert.
I had to put it in there because I was like, under the parentage of the Dark Sperm of Vengeance.
That's really
and he just
right.
And that opens his review, and he goes into just each movie afterwards. I'm like, wait, you didn't follow up on that.
I need you to elaborate.
You're just going
to
leave that out like that?
Oh, mm-hmm. My God.
That's why Ebert's our boy.
Yep. Oh, that's fucking funny.
Yeah, while critics were mostly thrilled about the double feature, audiences mostly weren't, and the film opened very poorly.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Yeah. It made a meager $11.5 million, just over one-fifth of its budget, whew, and lost to the second weekends of Meet the Robinsons and Blades of Glory, both crap movies, I believe. I'm not sure if I saw Meet the Robinsons, but Blades of Glory was...
Okay, yeah, who gives a shit about
stupid.
Blades of Glory? Meet the Robinsons is a very important Disney movie to my childhood.
I kind of like Blades of Glory sometimes.
I mean, it's kind of fun, but it's stupid.
It's dumb. It's so fucking dumb.
A Tarantino movie should have outperformed it.
He should have. I agree.
He should have agreed, but Blades of Glory is exactly the type of movie that, like... That made me hate comedies.
Yeah, that is a Will Ferrell AF movie right there.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah.
That's
exactly.
Pure Ferrell.
Exactly.
Oh, it was also beaten out by the very poorly reviewed Are We Done Yet?
Oh, no.
Wasn't that one of the Ice Cube
yes.
movies?
Yeah, that's when Ice Cube was trying to make himself mass market right there.
He was trying to appeal to the masses. Mm-hmm. And then everyone was like, isn't that Ice Cube?
But he did it for a little bit. But then, I don't know.
Yeah, I think RV did pretty good.
Yeah. He I don't know. He had like an era of all that stuff. But everybody just misses like Ice Cube, you know?
Yeah, everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, come back. Come back, man.
Just it's okay. Mm-hmm. We'll take you back.
Yeah. When all was said and done, Grindhouse only made about $67 million total, with Death Proof providing 300... Again, I say 300. 30, not 300.
You
30
wish it
million
was
of
in your heart, it was 300. It's okay. I get it.
Yeah, it was 300,000.
That's good.
It has been suggested in 2017 that the Weinsteins buried the film due to Robert Rodriguez's decision to cast Rose McGowan, as she had previously accused Harvey Weinstein of all the stuff that Harvey Weinstein did to get put in prison.
That's right. Yeah. That was the main story at the
time.
So
that was like implied that like the Weinsteins buried the film?
It was just later on, Robert Rodriguez went into it. He's just like, you know, based on his filmmaking experiences with Miramax,
right?
This one was a little different. He's like, I think, because the accusation was around at the time. So, but he really, you know, Rodriguez is a filmmaker. He's like, no, Rose McGowan fits the part. I'm casting Rose McGowan. I don't give a shit.
She did really well. I mean, she's also in... The Robert Rodriguez's movie, right?
She stars in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Planet Terror?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's the star.
Oh, okay. I only briefly skimmed over it, and I remember seeing her name, because I know she's in Planet Terror, but she's also in
Death
Proof.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, at this point, I think he had later said, very likely, this is probably what happened, because those are pretty painful accusations at the time.
Interesting.
And the Weinsteins were known for doing that to people. Actually, yes. Like, as a callback to Boondock Saints, the guy who made Boondock Saints never made another movie because he pissed off the fucking Weinsteins.
Yep.
He got fucked out of royalties on that movie. So, like, you know, all that fucking merch that those guys, like, you know,
all,
those
like,
Ed Lord guys got.
And, like, yeah. You know, all right.
He never saw a dollar for it.
Dude.
Wow.
He really pissed off the Weinsteins. Yeah, he pissed them. He got a big head about it. You know,
I mean,
he's like a first-time writer. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But,
so he was just... Okay.
But yeah.
I mean, that's not like... that doesn't warrant like that. But like, I mean, all right. Interesting.
But
interesting.
They were known to throw around their weight for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. They'd ruin your old motherfucking career. That's for sure.
Get fucked at the Weinsteins. Yep.
Older, they're definitely getting fucked now. So.
Yeah.
Yay. Oh, yeah.
Yay.
God, I hate those. Anyway. So... despite a disappointing run at the box office, Death Proof became a big hit on home media, so much so that Tarantino and Rodriguez considered doing a second double feature at some point, which is, you know.
Why didn't they?
Oh, that would have been so cool.
Do it again.
There's still time.
There's hope. So, to see how this film oddly recovered and became a cult classic, how about some ye olde Letterboxd reviews?
Oh, I didn't put the stats for it. Whatevs.
I can pull it up.
Pull up the stats, Alex. What is it? What are the stats? Let me actually go ahead and pull it up on mine, too. I can't believe I forgot that. Again, my writing delirium. Death Proof. Death Proof. It's actually about musicians.
So on Letterboxd, this film has an average 3.5 rating out of 5 stars out of 102,000 reviews.
No. It's out of 9.6 thousand reviews.
Not the one that I'm looking at.
What? Oh, that's weird.
Like, it...
Oh,
I'm literally looking at it. 102 ratings. 102,390.
Oh, this is 9.6 written reviews.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Get fucked.
All right, we got it.
So again, out of 102,000 reviews.
This is why you're right ahead of time. Gotcha.
Anyway... Scoobert New, a.k.a. Mo, says in their 5-star review, quote, "My favorite character development in the history of cinema is when Stuntman Mike becomes Stuntman Little Bitch." Facts.
He does. He throws a little fucking tantrum.
He be, like, truly, the second he gets shot, I'm like, it's a fucking light switch. Like, he's like, all right. Anyway, we'll talk about it. So, Kate says in her 5-star review, quote, "Sally Menke? In the editing room, oh my god, there's just so many fucking shots of feet," unquote.
Huh?
It's true.
definitely a foot-heavy movie.
It's so, like, the opening shot is feet.
Oh. Anyway. It's wonderful.
Anyway, Maria calls Death Proof, quote, "The Roadrunner Show, Car Chase Edition," in her 3.5-star review. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And finally, Alex Todd says in their 4-star review, quote, "The problem is this film doesn't get good until Mary Elizabeth Winstead shows up, but when she does, oh my god, it's a fucking masterpiece! ! Unquote.
I love her.
She's great.
She's.
I thought she was gonna be in this movie a little bit more.
Me too. I kind of wish she was part of the finale, to be honest with you. But I get, like, why they had her be a gag, essentially.
They did have to explain, hey, can we take this car by ourselves, please?
Cheerleader outfit lady. Yeah.
You know?
But, man, she's just so purty.
She's
so purty.
So, even though this could qualify as Tarantino's first real failure since his film debut, he was able to bounce back in just 2 years with the release of Inglourious Basterds. Though he never touched the horror genre again.
Shame, because I feel like he still got it. He could do it.
Yeah. Mm. 3 feature films were made based off of the trailers from Grindhouse, which were, as previously mentioned, A Hobo with a Shotgun, Machete, and Machete Kills.
That's right.
Eli Roth and Edgar Wright have both expressed interest in adapting their trailers for Thanksgiving and don't.
Give me the double feature.
I would like to see Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I would like to see don't.
I would like. I do. I want to see both. I want to see what they both do with them.
Yeah, double feature it.
Double do it.
Double
do it.
Tarantino has expressed interest in following up Grindhouse, this time with an old-school kung fu movie entirely in Mandarin. Though, there hasn't been much discussion about this for a while.
Oh, I'd watch that.
I've heard about this. Like, I've heard, like, him mention wanting to do this, but, mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see. So, regardless, Death Proof remains a strange film in his career, being the only horror film where he's credited as the director. Still, as with anything Tarantino, the fans have elevated its reputation over the years.
Yep.
And even though Grindhouse theaters may have died, we here at the Horrible People's Podcast say we'll take them back if we can just go to the fucking movies again.
Right? I'd do it. I'll take the sticky goddamn floors and tiny screen, dude.
I'll do it!
Like, everybody here smells. It's gonna be awesome.
Right?
Oh, well, with that, hey, we did it. We fucking did it. That's Death Proof, baby. But yeah. we got hell of course, yeah. Talk about the movie, so... As our resident guest here, Andrew, you get to answer first. What did you think overall of Death Proof from Quentin Tarantino?
I love it. I think it's great. It's a slow burn. I love Tarantino's, like, the chance he took to just cast a stunt actor as, like, the star of the movie.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell is great. Yeah. Kurt Russell's great as the villain, the scarred up stuntman Mike. He's such an interesting character, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. He's like, I like that he, again, like we were talking about this earlier, he managed to kind of give you like that kind of a sad sack kind of vibe sometimes when he needs to, and then mm-hmm. be also a little bit terrifying.
Yeah.
He's manipulative, and yeah. he does it very well. Like, they did not pull any fucking punches with, like, high caliber acting.
Oh, no, definitely not. And you get, obviously, all of these great actors get a chance to do Tarantino dialogue, which is just amazing. Like, his dialogue is, to me, just, I don't know. It's its own brand. It's okay. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
And it definitely, if the movie is played for cheese, he will give you the cheesy moments.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, you have an objection to this, huh?
I don't think he writes women very well.
Oh, that? I can't. You know what? Soapbox.
It's because all you think about is the feet.
It's true. But no, like, the entire time, like, we're, like he, like, when I was, I commented
I,
on this.
I did have that actually thought in my head. I was wondering about what you would say, because some of the conversations when it's just the women at the table together,
yes.
I kind of knew you would have something there. now that we're on it, please indulge.
So I had the same thought, like, when they're in the fucking car. Like, I was just like, okay, me and my friends, like... we don't talk like this.
No.
Ever. Like, I mean, like, sure, we talk about who we're having sex with, sure, but, like, it's not like this. Like, it is very, like, I was like, this is bad. This is, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of, through the movie, I was able to thankfully put it aside and, like, watch the movie and, like, enjoy, like, he's a great director. Like, mm-hmm. I will say that. I do very much enjoy his directing style, mm-hmm. but a lot of his interpretations of how women speak to each other, I was like, where are you getting this? Like, are you getting it from porn? Because I think you're getting it from porn.
Well, see, that's the thing. I think he's getting it from these old shitty Grindhouse movies.
And
he's fitting the tone pretty well.
And that's the thing, and I also had to remind myself of that, I didn't have this problem in other movies that I've seen of his. Like,
yeah,
in
Kill Bill.
Well, Kill Bill, I didn't have a problem with it, but I also haven't watched Kill Bill in a really long time. So, mm-hmm. to be fair, I need to. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which mm-hmm. is, like, the least Tarantino of his movies, which I understand.
Oh, to me, that's a Coen Brothers movie that Tarantino adapted.
yeah. Which is probably why I like it so much, because yes. I like Coen, like, the Coen Brothers. Yeah.
He does a take on that very, very well in my mind.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I also had to remind myself of that, like, this is supposed to be, like, a Grindhouse kind of, like, cheesy, borderline trashy, like, mm-hmm. movie.
I mean, it's 90% feet shots and ass shots.
It's
if you
true.
Really put them together.
It's true. Like, I get it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I have to like it.
True, very, very true. But I think with what he's going for...
I got
he
it.
Succeeds.
Yes.
He succeeds quite
absolutely.
A bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. See, but the fact that you were watching it, and you were like, oh, Alex is going to have something to fucking say
oh,
about
yeah,
it.
Oh, yeah, I knew.
Like,
yeah.
It goes to show that, like, it's a little, like, it's a touch overplayed.
Yeah.
Like, even if he had, like, dialed it back just a little bit, it still would have lent itself to the fact that it was a Grindhouse movie and, like, everyone's wearing fucking, like, mm-hmm. tight fucking t-shirts and, like, you know. Like, I got it.
The shortest of the shorts, yes.
The shortest of the shorts. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, it's Austin. It's, like, 4,000 degrees. We get it.
Oh, the Texas Chili Parlor. Oof.
Which, it was also pouring rain. Go figure.
Oh, yeah. Well, your take on the dialogue, Andrew, huh? This is actually pretty interesting. Tarantino dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, it was very Tarantino, that's for sure.
This whole movie is like Tarantino just in and out. Like, it's a Tarantino template at this point, you know?
Yeah.
But it's, to me, it feels like also a transitional between his more like auteur era that you get after this. He's always been an auteur, but he got some real Oscar cred after this with Inglourious Basterds, and his movies I felt got longer.
I've wanted to watch Inglourious Basterds for forever. I haven't seen it. I want to.
Oh, it's good.
I've heard nothing, but I've heard mostly good things. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've heard anything distinctly bad. But
the opening scene will fucking break your goddamn heart. It's really good.
Great. Mm-hmm. Love that. But I'm actually surprised with the number of Tarantino films I've seen.
Which ones have you not seen? Fill up the filmography. Fucking do it. I've seen them all.
I know you have, because you're a
fucking Jackie Brown. I've never seen Jackie Brown. Oh. No, I need to. It's definitely on my list, but like somehow like that one keeps getting away from me.
Dude, like you know how I say Once Upon a Time Hollywood is a Coen Brothers Tarantino film? I feel like Jackie Brown is like a Tarantino Spike Lee film. Like there's something a little different about it.
Just to stay on track here, Death Proof is his lowest highly rated reviewed movie on Rotten Tomatoes. It has a 64%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's his, yeah.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. Which is, because I, and going back to thoughts on the movie, I did very much enjoy this movie for the most part. It was like, it kind of did lose me. Mm-hmm. but I was sucked into it. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't necessarily enjoying myself the entire time, but I didn't want to stop watching.
That's a good point. I would say it has kind of a soggy beginning, if anything.
Yeah.
And to me, when it gets the second set of Voluptuous Women,
yes,
really take the story in a good direction.
God. Tracy Tom's in
I
this.
I gotta say, I was very upset that Butterfly died. I was very partial to that character.
Mm-hmm. I was attached to Butterfly.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I have seen Reservoir Dogs, part of Pulp Fiction. I've never finished it. I need to.
Oh my God.
I know. I suck. Kill Bill, Volume 1 and 2, Death Proof, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, so no Django?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Django's so
what? Cool. I feel like it would just upset me.
Por qué?
I don't know.
No, Django's awesome.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I want to watch it. I'm just like, I don't know. I was like debating.
Why would it upset? What's your?
Well, Django's supposed to upset you, but then like you're like, yes, it makes a payoff of like when he kills the bad guys so much better.
It's such a revenge film.
Which I think I will enjoy because considering the amount of emotional fucking payoff I got at the end of this, when like they're just like, no, we're going to go fucking kill him. And I was just like, wait, we're going to go fucking kill him? Okay, let's go. And like, it was very satisfying. Mm-hmm. The ending of Death Proof is like, so to answer again, going back to your question, the beginning of the movie and like, again, like it, I can't look away, but I'm kind of like, okay, whatever. Like what?
Almost like a car crash, huh?
Yeah, kind of. But by the end of it, I'm still attached enough to these characters that I don't want anything bad to happen to them.
Yeah.
Two, when they get their revenge, I'm all for it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm oddly surprised at the revenge element at the end of it. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't anticipating it. Mainly because there's also the, I guess, not to go all like psychosexual, whatever, but the fact that he's like a serial killer who uses cars and like, not to go all Crash by David Cronenberg either, but it's very sexual.
It probably gets him off a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Definitely with the Rose McGowan death, you kind of feel that more than anything from it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's a fucked up character and I really enjoy Kurt Russell's character.
Oh, man. See, you gotta watch Django. Well, it also depends on your tolerance for the N-word, because it's...
Well, that's my problem. It's like, I was just like, what? Huh?
But then you get a real villainous Leonardo DiCaprio.
I know.
And it's pretty badass.
All right. Yeah. I will give it a shot. How about that?
Inglourious Basterds first, then Django. Okay. Go, just do it chronologically. Just fucking go.
Okay.
I'm making her do it, Andrew.
Do it.
I also still haven't seen Jackie Brown, but
it's so different.
I mean, if you guys both haven't seen it, it's from 1997, so I figured.
But it's so different from all of his movies. It's definitely, I don't know how to describe it. It's weird. It's got Chris Tucker in it, though. Pretty interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, Chris Tucker in a Tarantino movie.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, Cal Penn was almost cast in this film, too.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What?
I don't know who he would have been. Probably Eli Roth's other boy. But he was almost in there, too. All right. Tarantino and his actors, man. But, okay, so we all were in agreement here. Enjoyed the film.
Yes.
Liked it there. So this being Tarantino's first official, like, really only horror film, how do you think this Death Proof actually takes on the conventions of a slasher? Because he described it as a slasher in interviews. Like, it's his kind of take on it, but his, you know, it's Tarantino doing it.
It's a really good question.
Andrew?
How does it manage the genre conventions?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, he is a serial killer. He is a stalker, you know?
He is. I mean, he does all of the typical creepy things. Also, he doesn't fucking die until he does. But, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, he purposely outfits his car so he doesn't die.
Yeah.
And I think that gives him this almost supernatural kind of vibe to him,
mm-hmm.
Which lends itself to the slasher genre where it's, like, it's very hard to kill the villain, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that the stalking element of it...
Oh, yeah.
...is very prominent. Like, especially when, in the very beginning, when they're going to, you know, Guero's or whatever the fuck mm-hmm. it's called. I think it actually is. And the car pulls in front, and, like, it stops, and then it just drives away. And, like, mm-hmm. Butterfly is just, like, suspicious, but okay. And...
That is... It's very reminiscent of that scene in Halloween when she, like, looks out the window.
Yeah.
And she sees the... Definitely. Sees Michael Myers standing there and then looks again and he's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, I didn't think about that, yeah. Man, Butterfly was a good character.
She was such a good character.
She was
character.
A goddamn good character. They yeah. gave her such heart, too. Like, it just, you know. Like,
she was sassy and, yeah. like, she was great. And, like, mm-hmm. she had a wit about her that I did really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, I did enjoy her character.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I think that he did what he intended to do with the rules of the genre. Like, mm-hmm. I think he bent them. I don't think he broke them.
Yeah. I would say there are certain things in the genre that he took the supernatural element out and decided to ground it in mm-hmm. ways. Like, the stalking aspect is a lot more grounded because the killer's not just looking in the shadows. The killer's at the same bar having a conversation mm-hmm. and keeping a side eye, you know? It's not doing mm-hmm. something somebody in a mask and with a knife behind would be doing. But he doesn't have to because he kills with his car, right. you know? So he has to kind of put himself in a situation where he can have the opportunity to do that. And then the sex equals death doesn't quite do it, but there's a lot of sexual talk. There's
I mean,
more
yeah,
kind
everyone's
of salacious
fucking
behavior.
In this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, Butterfly goes and makes out. But, like, it doesn't – he plays it kind of like – I know, right? There's no real virginal characters in him. The closer you get Rosario Dawson, kind of. I mean, that whole, the second set of voluptuous ladies aren't quite as about it as the first set. So
they have a whole conversation about who they're fucking and why they're fucking them.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like the first set was maybe a little more. I mean, maybe they were framed in a way that shows their sexuality a little bit more.
Again,
why are the second set not that way?
I think that does lead more to the sex equals death trope in that sense because mm-hmm. they're the ones who get... fucking murked
exactly
stupendously
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. They're portrayed in that
which
kind of
their
way.
Death scene by the way I was like I because like again haven't seen the movie know nothing about it went into it knowing nothing other than a brief synopsis where I was like oh Kurt Russell okay cool
mm-hmm.
And I was like they're all dead there's an hour and 10 minutes left of this movie what's yeah.
They pull a Janet Leigh with, like, five ladies.
They do. Yeah. Like, I was like, this is Drew Barrymore. What's
yep,
happening?
This is Drew Barrymore, Janet Leigh. Yep. Same shit. But just done with more people.
Done with more people, but also it's like two movies.
Yeah. Wait. So real quick then, before we get further on. Andrew, you saw the Grindhouse version of it. How was that? Was it split still feel pretty evenly? Because I saw the two-hour version.
You know, I barely remember. It was like, oh, God. How many years ago was that? Like 15 years ago almost.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
That's 14 years.
Yeah, 14 years ago.
Fucking A. Jesus.
Okay. Yeah, I honestly couldn't tell you what the difference is because,
oh
like,
God.
As soon as it came out, like, on DVD, that's the one I watched over and over and over and over and over. So I only saw it in the theaters once.
I want to watch this. So you're saying you saw the 90-minute one, do you think?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
Are you asking me?
Oh, yeah, Alex. Sorry, I looked at Alex's face.
I know.
When I did it.
I was just like, "This is not a visual medium."
It's not.
Let me check, and I can tell you because
you have a watch history.
I do.
Oh, look at you. Technology, huh?
Okay, but yeah, I found it on some like very sketchy like site.
Oh, you did the old, you did the, you know, that fits the tone.
Huh?
That fits the tone.
Watching it on a laptop with my headphones because the speaker on my laptop is slightly shot was very apt, I feel.
I saw it on my goddamn projector with my roommate. I gotta say, the movie deserves like the biggest fucking screen.
I would love,
hell yeah,
nothing more. I watched the 2-hour version.
You watched the 2-hour version?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I would love nothing more than to watch this at a drive-in. Yeah. Like, I would love to watch Planet Terror and Death Proof at a drive-in. Like, I would love to have that, like, grindhouse drive-in fucking experience. Like, Frida, that sounds great.
If the Frida does it, I say we do it.
Oh, absolutely.
I say if we they, fucking
okay,
do it.
Okay, yeah.
Hell
yeah.
The
Frida, if you are listening, this is what, these are our demands.
Please, please. Ugh. Keep into it.
Let's see, the stunts in this film very notably do not feature CGI, something that is difficult to find in most modern feature films. How do you feel about the automobile stunts compared to more contemporary films?
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's a goddamn good one.
I mean, you can't talk about Death Proof without talking about the fucking stunts. Because, like, holy shit, Zoe Bell is, like, strapped to the hood of a car going, like, 80 miles an hour, like...
And you know she's doing her own stunts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dude, and it's shot on, like, you know, Tarantino's like a film boy. So, like, it's shot in the most clear, like, that is a person.
That is, yeah. That is, it is definitely a person. Now, obviously, they're probably not going 80 miles per hour, but, yeah, like, that was,
it creates a tension.
Well, also, I will say, just as a side note on, like, a personal level, I drive a Dodge Charger.
Yes, she does.
So, oh, nice.
So this, like, I was just like, I feel this. This instills a rage in me that I relate to. That I just, like, I mean, and those the hoods of those cars are very long. It's not a, it's not a Challenger, so it's, yeah, not, like, that nice, but, I mean.
It's still a good old piece of American muscle. Like,
I mean, yeah. I do feel like I'm driving a fucking muscle car.
You are. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. Compared with modern kind of car chases,
yeah,
it doesn't, it cuts away exactly when it needs to, but it gives you a, like, the danger shot for as long as it can to make you tense, and then goes away. I feel like modern,
I'm so tense.
Yeah, well a lot of modern car chases are just like bloom, just back to back to back and then done. Like, it, right, doesn't feel the same kind of, I would say, actually, you know what, a one that kind of does it super well, not compared to this, but pretty good, the car chase in Pineapple Express. I don't know if you ever seen that movie. No.
What makes,
oh,
you think?
I have.
I mean,
you've seen it.
Yeah.
No.
I don't remember the car chase, though.
There's a car chase in Pineapple Express.
I was very high every time I saw,
yeah,
it.
I feel like that's almost required.
So, it definitely is.
But, okay, quick aside. So one of the things I do really love about this movie that I wanted to mention before I forget is I love that it's other stunt people that take down this, like,
mm-hmm,
barely active stuntman who I think just made being a stuntman his entire personality.
Yes.
And he was just like, I need to do this because I have a tiny penis or something. And they're just like, oh no, we're going to fucking kill you. Like,
yeah,
like, we're stunt.
We're
like,
pros.
She's,
we're
a
young,
stunt
we're
driver.
Fucking, yeah.
She's like, she's like, literally the jacket says, like, she's like part of, like, the stunt person's guild or whatever the fuck. And she's just like, no, I know how to hang out of a fucking car,
mm-hmm,
while it's moving. I'm an actual stunt person. You're fucked. Like, I don't know what it was about that I just really loved. Like, I don't know. There was some, like, cosmic justice there that I really liked.
Definitely. I mean, to me, it screams like he's done this plenty of times. And it's nice that he found the one after so many
times.
The
ones that he should not have fucked,
yeah,
with.
Yeah, that he should not have fucked,
well,
with.
Well, I also loved the scene that when they're at the diner,
mm-hmm,
where she's just like, yeah, I have a fucking gun. Because, and then, like,
she uses it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm gonna fucking use it. And because I don't think he expects them to. Like, he's,
yeah,
just, like, and it's one of those, like, shifting times things where, mm-hmm, like, I think Rosario Dawson's character is like, well, have a knife, have whatever. And she's like, no, because that's how you get shot.
Yes.
And then the time comes where it's like, this is a perfect instance to use my fucking gun. Because someone's trying to kill him. You know what I mean?
He does a literal Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
He does a literal Chekhov's gun,
yeah,
in this film. But yeah, I mean, even playing into the car chase, this really does have so many elements that come into it that a lot of modern films kind of don't. Their car chase is happening because the criminal or they're being chased by a fucking transformer or some shit.
There's no Bumblebee in this movie.
Yeah, there ain't no Bumblebee in this shit. That's right. Oh, that's funny. All right, let's see what else. Music is a big part of Tarantino films, with this in particular having no original music and all licensed music or scores from other films. What do you think about Tarantino's music selection in just his films in general, and how does Death Proof actually rank among them? From what you've seen, you know?
He kills it regularly. I think Death Proof's like one of the best ones.
I agree.
Because like so the songs in it are so good. Like the song that she does the lap dance to,
that was really good.
Down in Mexico. Mm-hmm. That is a good one. I've definitely listened to that song a lot outside of the movie.
Oh, I've driven with the LA skyline behind playing that bitch on the 10.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I've definitely ridden down the 101 many a time.
Oh, yeah.
Banging that song. I really like that Chick Habit song. I think that's like the song they end on.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it's the perfect ending song. Like it's always perfect for the moment for me.
Okay, so that song is, and this is just me being a little dorky. It's based off of a French song that I love.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So when I heard the opening beats of it, I was like, oh, they're playing this song. It is the lyrics are completely different, mm-hmm. but it's a very good song.
It carries the melody of the song.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's very cool. So, but yeah, the Chick Habit, mm-hmm. And it's completely in French, the original.
Oh, interesting. I gotta find it then.
Yeah, I can send it to you.
That's just good. Yeah, let me know. But I would actually say, looking at this, I agree with Andrew 100%. This is one of his best soundtracks. And the movie is guided by the soundtrack, probably a lot more than some of his other films, mm-hmm. to be totally honest. That being said, his best soundtrack is Jackie Brown. I know you guys hadn't seen it, but there's a level of like soul music in there that I don't know what it is. I always thought Pulp Fiction had near perfect music as well. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Right there. I'm honestly actually perfect. But something about the way you can tell that Jackie Brown was done immediately after Pulp Fiction because it carries a lot of those tunes.
Okay.
Kind of fits the tone of the movie. But I mean, that's the thing. Tarantino in all of his films, even his period pieces, you know, he'll use a licensed song in his period piece and doesn't really take you out all that much. Django being a prime example of this. I can't remember what song it was.
I'm just looking at the soundtrack for Death Proof, and I'm like, oh, yes, I remember this.
You're like, okay, Spotify playlist time.
That's, right.
Yeah, no, that's coming up.
But no, I did, one of the things I will definitely give him credit for, just as a filmmaker, mm-hmm. His decision-making when it comes to music mm-hmm. is very smart, and it's very, it does help, like, kind of suck you into the universe that he's trying to get you into.
Oh, I agree. It fits the tone 100% of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. This one in particular, like, or Death Proof in particular, really just every time just hit the fucking nail on the head.
Dude, when I was in high school, we would play, like, the Kill Bill soundtrack when we're doing road trips.
Really? Oh. That's great. Oh, I love that.
Same here.
Right? Isn't that the shit, though? Like, we'd visit our friends that live in other cities, and we just fucking bump, like, She Shot Me Down, or He Shot Me Down, and all like, the anime fucking songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one is like, dun, dun, dun.
Yes. Oh, when it fucking, or Anishi.
Did you guys notice the little Kill Bill, like, thing, Rosario Dawson's cell phone?
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The whistle. God, Kill Bill has a fucking, that's so hard to pick between all his films, really. Ah, even me saying Jackie Brown, I'm kind of going back now that I'm thinking about Kill Bill songs again.
But I need to rewatch Kill Bill because, again, after this weekend mm-hmm. that with my brother where I was like, you need to watch all these movies. I showed him The Big Lebowski once and he was like, mm-hmm. okay, fine. It was whatever. And then he watched it a second time because he's like, I didn't like it the first time. I'm going to watch it a second time to make sure. Mm-hmm. And he loved it the second time. And I was like, I fucking got you, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. I told him, you need to watch Kill Bill. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, what? And I was like, you need to watch Kill Bill 1 and 2 back to back. Because that's how they were meant to be watched. And he was like, what? And I was like, it's supposed to be like a 6-hour long movie. Just watch it. Yeah. He's like, okay.
Oh, then of course, we can't leave out Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that fits that tone.
But the music in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just fucking chef's kiss, man. Superb. Seriously.
I still have. I definitely did the playlist at some point, and part of my like regular rotation is some like Hector, like all those fucking songs. Okay, we got one more, guys, and then rating.
Yeah,
and then go from there.
Cool.
What else we got?
Pick one, birthday boy.
Oh, it's my birthday one, right? Okay, blah blah blah. We already talked about the sequels. Oh, I would want to hear your guys' take on this one. This is about Film Nerd coming out. Okay. The grindhouse-style presentation is prominent throughout Death Proof, coming during a time when digital filmmaking began taking over traditional filmmaking, the latter of which Tarantino has obviously championed like a motherfucker. So, with that said, how do you guys feel about film versus digital and that whole debate?
Good question.
Oh, we're getting deep in here. That's right.
I think they both got their own merits.
Yes.
You know?
Feeling my answers.
You know, there's something so beautiful about, like, film.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also things that you can achieve with digital that you can't necessarily with film. Because I remember 28 Days Later, I believe that was like one of the early like digital, you know, things they shot on. Like I think they shot it on a Red or something.
Yeah,
and they use like high frame rates and stuff for like the zombies running and shit, and like it gave it a different feel from film, where it felt like more frightening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
more like uncanny when you're not used to seeing something done like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So I think they both have their own merits. I love that Tarantino sticks to film though.
Oh yeah,
because he does it so fucking well. But yeah, that's yeah. my opinion. I will not pick like... a side.
I think, I feel similarly when it comes to, like, photography.
Mm-hmm.
There is something very, like, I can only describe it as, like, robust about traditional film.
Mm-hmm.
About, like, developing film. And I felt similarly when I learned analog photography. Like, there's mm-hmm. something very, like, almost ritualistic about it that I loved. And there's something that transfers over to that when you do when you do traditional film.
Mm-hmm.
That you can see it, like there is something tangible about it. Mm-hmm. And I can't quite put my finger on how to describe it, but there's something there. And I think that's part of Tarantino's kind of like fingerprint, right? And like that is part of his look, his mm-hmm. signature. That being said, I do also love digital, because mm-hmm. you get to, I think it gives you a little bit more flexibility, and it's fresh. It's very sparkly. I don't know.
To me, digital handles scale very well. Like it handles a lot of like big picture kind of stuff. If you're gonna do blockbuster, you're gonna want to do digital, because you're gonna have a lot of like malleability with like mm-hmm. what you're trying to shoot. But also, I do feel like there was an era. Probably around the prequel era, to be honest with you, where digital was kind of still being developed in a way. Like, people were still trying to figure out how to make it look really good and not always nailing it. I feel like with camera technology being where it is now, they can even almost get, not exactly emulate the film look, but they're getting really good at kind of getting close to it.
There was a learning curve for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like in recent times we've seen a big jump in terms of just even like TV shows. Like even mm-hmm. like a weird kind of like not even related to this, but like the show Master of None on Netflix.
That's a very weird jump, but sure.
Very weird. But it looks good. Every frame kind of looks badass, especially in the first season. Like, it's weird because it's such a calm, like, non-blockbuster, kind of weird. Yeah. Not sitcom.
I was going to say, like, you're describing, like, a show that I would probably likely never watch just because of how, like, normal it is.
Yeah, it seems a little mundane, right?
Right.
But it's shot pretty dynamically.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird. But yeah, that's kind of what you get now that more people have had time to use digital.
You get to play around with it, figure it out.
You do. But, I mean, you're right in that film itself still... As much as they can kind of get close to it, still not film.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not that. And when you do something like film shot well, is almost impossible to really touch. That being said, there's very few people that can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And even people that can try to do it, if they fuck it up, it's going to look shitty.
It's fucked up forever.
And it's fucked up forever. Exactly. So that being said, each has their own place very, very clearly. And if you have an auteur that knows how to use film, like a Nolan... or a Tarantino or a Scorsese, But Scorsese's all digital now, so you know, don't tell the others that.
You say as you're speaking directly into a microphone.
Yeah, but like, you know, actually Martin Scorsese is a good example. Like, seeing what he's done with film in his entire career, like, the dude fucking kills it.
Mm.
But seeing what he's done digital too, like, there's some CG in Wolf of Wall Street you never know with CG. You never know with CG. And it's, like, full-on building.
It's, like, seamless.
Seamless. Okay. Exactly.
See,
totally
that
seamless.
I like. Like, if I know I'm looking at something that's CG, like, for example, the CG that they fucking shoved into, like, New Hope.
Yeah.
Like, I
would hurt my heart saying that shit. Oh, I had the VHSs without any of that CG in it. I knew that as my Star Wars. I went to go see it in theaters, and I was like, that is not my Star Wars.
Every time I see it, I'm like, that just looks wrong, dude.
Give me the shitty, bad, only Ewok fucking celebration song at the end of Return of the Jedi. I don't want to see everybody celebrating. I want to hear that orchestra. No, give me the fucking...
Unnecessary. Well, well.
Man, yeah.
Yeah,
I hear
you. They definitely, again, you can mix the two, obviously. They've done it for years. I mean, Jurassic Park being a prime example. But like... You know, now we're at a point where we kind of perfected both of them.
You mean to tell me those weren't real dinosaurs?
No. Alex. Not all of them.
Man, when I was a little kid, I thought that the cloning technology was real. I thought the dinosaurs were real.
Okay, me
it
too.
It took like a long time for me to be convinced that they weren't.
Only because one of my aunts, she is very into like amber. Like, mm-hmm. So she has like bugs trapped in amber, and like she had a bunch of them. So when I first watched Jurassic Park and I knew she had them, I was like, do we have dinosaurs like city? Like, do we make dinosaurs? And my heart was broken that day.
I remember like looking more into dinosaurs and being a little heartbroken. I'm like, wait a second. Like, even as a kid, I was just like, so they're more related to birds? They probably had feathers?
Yeah.
It was one of those things where I'm like, no, but not Jurassic Park. How?
Birds and sharks,
they use frog DNA.
God, I need to rewatch Jurassic Park.
That was a good one. Yeah.
I have a couple movies that I'm like, I have not watched them in a minute. But...
Okay, but like, when we both get vaccinated and shit, we're watching Inglourious Basterds on my goddamn projector.
Yes.
That's what we're fucking doing.
Yes.
Because I already saw Django on there. But we're watching Inglourious Basterds on there.
Down.
Oh, anyways, guys. We're getting there.
Okay.
What would you both rate Death Proof out of 5 gratuitous foot shots?
I will just get mine out of the way because you guys won't agree with me. I'm going to say 3.5. And I will defend this because I liked the movie. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy it. However, like, this is hard for me because, like, the last 15 minutes made the fucking movie for me. But to do that, I had to sit through an hour and 50 minutes of like, I'm not sure if I like this movie or not.
Interesting.
Like,
okay.
I had to sit with that, like, not sure. Like, I was not sure if I liked the movie or not. And then at the very end, I was just like, this is cool. But everything else beforehand, I was like on the fence.
So the elements had to come together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It did have a good resolution for me, and it did have a good emotional payoff. So I did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure if I'm going to be rewatching it on a regular basis.
Makes sense. Makes total sense. That's definitely, you know, signifies the quality. I agree. Andrew, what do you think?
I think like a 4.5.
Nice.
Okay.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. You know, the stunts are incredible. The characters are really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kurt Russell's great as the villain. It's shot very well. It's creepy and it's fast paced and fun. You know, at least the car chases are.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I'm gonna say 4. Actually, it's a solid 4 for me. I'd say the first half is definitely kind of the most mixed bag.
Okay.
Even though I love the characters in the first half, I really do. I do think it could have been cut down in certain ways to give you... Because I think the second half is like the movie. That's like the hard...
That's like the real...
Yeah.
I know. Now, like, looking back, it does feel like the first set of Voluptuous Women was like the longest intro ever.
Yeah, it feels like a first act the whole way through, which kind of throws me off a little bit. But the second half, to me, like, really elevates the film like a lot. I'd say it's a solid... 4.
The pacing does throw me off just a smidge, but that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I was on YouTube, like, looking at videos of, like, Death Proof to, like, you know, remind myself of some of the things. And I saw online there's a fan edit that's, like, 70 minutes long.
Whoa, what? Oh, that's
interesting. Yeah, and I'm going to watch it a little bit later just to see, because I'm a fan of fan edits of movies, just because, like, you know, like, sometimes I feel like the fans get it, you know?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I like to see what someone else thinks, like, the movie should be. So I'm going to check that out and see how that stacks up.
Right, because there's an art to cutting a movie down. Like, my personal fan edit, like, I've been wanting to watch Topher Grace's version of the prequels for so long. Have you heard about that?
What?
Topher
Grace edited down the prequels to, like, a regular movie.
All three of them?
Yeah, so we cut out, like, I think most of The Phantom Menace. And, like, went from Attack of the Clones to Revenge of the Sith. And he got it done in a 2-hour movie.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, huh. But, I mean, that's where Andrew's point really comes in. A lot of times the fans really get it. And from what I've heard reports of, it's been screened a few times and people are like, that was really good.
Interesting.
Yeah, but when you know, because not the directors don't always nail it. I mean, it's their movie, it's their baby, but sometimes they get a little gratuitous,
you know? I can admit that, you know, some people struggled in the prequel department, but that's fine. I still love them, and fuck you.
No, I still like them.
You brought it up. You brought up the sore subject. I know I have to get defensive over the prequels. Like, unnecessarily.
Throw a little shade there. There you go.
Unnecessarily defensive.
But, I you know, to the strength of fan edits, there's definitely a basis for
yeah.
that. Yeah, so I would agree on that.
But, all right, sick.
But with that, huh?
Yeah, so I think that's it for this week. That was Death Proof from 2007, directed by Quentin Tarantino. Thank you so much for coming back, Andrew. As always, it is such a pleasure to have you.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. I like you guys a lot. It's fun to be on this show.
Oh, it's so great. Next week... Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man.
next week, we're I'm not going to tell you what the film is. I'll tell you the director because it's my birthday. We're covering our David Lynch film.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, yeah.
And are we having another guest next week?
We're having another guest next week.
Yes.
So yeah.
Do you want to say who?
It's our boy Phil's coming back.
Yeah, Phil's coming back next week. And we are covering a David Lynch film because David Lynch is Phil's boy. So it'll be a fun time. I'm terrified because the pressure.
Oh, yeah. Alex is writing it, so...
But it'll be fun. But until then, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes and writing a review. It does help other people find our podcast. So if you want to help share and spread the love, please do so if you feel so inclined. And then if you would like to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod. And then we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast, HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And if you would like to follow Anthony, you can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And where can people find you, Andrew? Plug your shit.
Okay. You can find me on Instagram. It's at Fritz Bone Lord.
Yeah, it is.
And my Twitter is at ACParker320.
Wonderful. And is there anything you would like to plug? Any projects you're working on? Anything like that?
Well, I've been doing this thing called Frequency 101, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. It's, you were telling us about that last time. I'm following them. It looks really fun.
Same here. Nice. Yeah. It's the audio version of Channel 101, which is this film festival that they do every month, or they did every month up until COVID. And that had been going for like 15 years. And basically, there's 10 shows there. People make pilots for shows, and then they screen them at this festival. And then the audience votes for 5, and the top 5 shows get to make another episode, and the bottom 5 shows get canceled. So we're doing like the audio version of that. And right now, we've got a show in there called Ghosters. That's I think we're doing our 5th episode now. So we've been hanging in there for a while. It's pretty fun. It's, you know, just all audio drama, which I'm all about. And I highly recommend you check that out because there's some very interesting and creative shows on there from a lot of like really talented people.
Yeah, it looks
like
great.
The people. Yeah. The people we're competing with right now. There's some writers for like Rick and Morty, and then there's some other people. They did. They do some Disney Plus shows and stuff. So yeah, there's definitely quality content there in bite-sized format.
Awesome. Yeah, so. Love it. Okay. I think that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone. Until, you know, next week, if you find a mysterious car following you, make sure you have your concealed carry license, I guess.
And you know what? Watch your feet.
Bye, guys.
Yeah, dude, don't stick your legs out the window. This movie taught me that.
That's how I drive, Andrew. That's how I drive. See ya.
Bye, guys.